Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We're Grant and Danny, and you are listening to The Fan. Former Major League Baseball General Manager Steve Phillips is on the show at 1. This hour, we'll discuss the Nats offense, needing to get going in this LCS to keep the winning ways rolling. And NFL Week 6, we can go around the horn on some of what took place yesterday. But speaking of yesterday, the Redskins won. We got a Victory Monday show finally, and nobody more happy about it than our guy, Slasherini. Let's kick off the Beltway Blitz. The Redskins didn't just win, people.
Congrats, man.
They ran the football.
Yeah, they did.
23 carries. 118 yards. They ran it just enough to almost let the Dolphins win the game. And here to talk about it is Chris Russell, ladies and gentlemen.
What do you mean? I talked about it for 3.5 hours yesterday. I saw your comment. I had to use that comment as fuel for my spitfire yesterday about how the Redskins did the absolute right thing, and that is the school and the thought process of limiting the most mediocre, average, okay quarterback who I would never, ever, 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 ever let throw more than 27 or 28 times in any one game ever in the existence of mankind, Case Keenum. They did it perfectly.
So, 4 rushes for Case Keenum. Those are all scrambles. So, 29 called pass plays. This is not you know, without whatever penalties got taken away. But 23 carries for Peterson. 3 carries for Thompson. That's 26. Right. 1 for Smallwood, 27. 1 for Steven Sims, that's 28. One for Richard, 29.
Yeah.
29 to 29. The ratio, baby.
The ratio.
1-1.
The 50-50 balance.
17 points on the board against the worst defense this sport has to offer.
Which of your 17 points against a defense that would allow 20 to 11 guys plucked out of the crowd was your favorite?
Here's the thing, boys.
Yeah.
I understand that I'm not taking any victory parades, unlike Bruce Allen,
are.
Who's thumping his chest right now, saying, "See, I told you it was all Jay's fault." Anyway, I'm not taking any victory more. Here's what I'm saying. For me, it's all about limiting, exposing our mediocre quarterback and our mediocre offensive line and pass protection. That's what it's all about for me. Even if I go down losing and being average and mediocre with the run game, I'm going to hope that that limits my mistakes and makes my mediocre quarterback better in the long run. It didn't yesterday because he's a mediocre quarterback. If you get a better quarterback, you don't have to rely on the run as much.
Let's talk quarterback for a second.
Yes.
You know that I have been first team. Not really sure about this Dwayne Haskins situation since draft night.
Yeah.
I would say I'm skeptical but hopeful, right? Unlike most people who just anointed him the next great thing.
Right.
If he can't give you what Case Keenum did on Sunday
with all the running that took place,
then you got to draft another quarterback anyway. Okay, you ran the ball, you had balance, play action worked. The Dolphins are horrific. Keenum went 13 of 25, basically 50%, for 166, a couple touchdowns. Dwayne Haskins can't do that?
Oh, I'm sure he can. He can give you 3 money throws, which Case Keenum made yesterday, right? The 2 touchdowns and the 1 from the shadows of his own end zone.
Great throw.
Great call, great throw, great execution, of course, to Terry McLaurin. Who else? He can give you that. What I think he can't give you, Haskins, is no sacks and no interceptions. That's what I think he can't give you, right?
Okay, but... So
is that fair?
Yeah, okay, then how about this? If you don't want to play Haskins, they've just decided they're not going to do it. First of all, again, I would point out that I think you need to draft a quarterback if this guy is so incompetent of playing on October 14th that it might hinder his development, which I don't buy.
I don't know if incompetence, though, is the right
word. Whatever word you want to use.
I think he's just not ready, incapable, not yet, whatever.
He should be more ready.
Okay.
But second... Then play Colt McCoy. I promise you Colt McCoy does more yesterday than Case Keenum did.
I would agree with you. I could be misreading this whole thing. I still don't think Colt McCoy is healthy 100%.
Really?
I could be misreading it based on what Callahan said last week, the beating that he took against the Patriots, 6-7 sacks, whatever. I still don't think something's right there.
Let's talk about the good team, please.
And I agree, but I agree with you that Colt in this offense would be better.
Genuinely, from the bottom of our heart, congratulations.
We feel good for you
for the running game.
Oh, by the way, can I point out
Be quick, because Sam Fortier is coming on.
Hang on, Sam. This is important. He never said, the stupid Callahan guy, Callahan, he never said it was just about rushing attempts. He said it was rush attempts and pass completions. I want to point that out for the record. He said that four times in that one cut. He never said it was just about rushing attempts.
Right, but specific to the running game. He said it's about rushing attempts.
And pass completions.
But specific to the rushing game.
Just for the running game, it's about attempts.
He said, when it comes to the running game, rushing attempts,
right,
not yards per carry.
But he said, here's how you win. Rush attempts and pass completions.
I know, but you're not listening. You're not listening. When he was asked about the running game,
he
said, rush attempts, not yards per carry. That's one of the dumbest comments that's ever been made.
I understand that, but he's trying to set something up, which happened on the fourth drive yesterday.
You keep riding with Bill Callahan. Let me know where that gets you.
All right.
Thank you for the time.
Baseball.
Let's talk about baseball, please. Sam Fortier, NLCS, Nats up 2-0. It was good to see you in St. Louis. How did they come back with a 2-0 series lead?
Yeah, I should first check in. Are you guys okay? I felt like I was listening to my parents argue in the living room again.
It happened. No.
Yeah.
We're old friends.
Go
it's
in your room,
fine.
Sam. Close your door and put a pillow over your
no
head.
Matter what happens, we still love you, buddy.
I appreciate it. Yeah, the Nationals come back home with a 2-0 lead, due in large part to their starting pitching. Obviously, when you take no-hitters into the seventh inning, both nights at least, huge part of coming back. And obviously, the Cardinals have their ace going tonight in Jack Flaherty, but when you counter with Steven Strasburg, you got to feel still pretty good about your chances.
How'd the Nats get more offense here, Sam? Listen, it's going to be at a premium. You mentioned it. Jack Flaherty is filthy. He's excellent. He shoves it on everybody. How did the Nats scratch a couple runs across here, give themselves a chance to win with Stras on the bump at home?
Yeah, I think the key to this is going to be how they attack, any ace starting pitcher across the division, across the league. You got to get their pitch count up. You got to, the top of the lineup has to see a lot more pitches. Adam Eaton, other than two at bats in the first two games, hasn't done what he's, done best throughout the season, which is, make a guy throw a lot of pitches, see his whole arsenal. I think you need to get back to that kind of grind it out approach, so you don't allow, like Adam Wainwright, obviously he allowed three runs in that second game, but he was in the seventh inning on 80 pitches. You can't let that happen with Jack Flaherty today.
Sam Fortier of the Washington Post, speaking of which, it has now been announced by the Washington Post that Elena Deladon, the WNBA MVP and one of the best players on the champion Mystics, will throw out the first pitch for the Nationals tonight. What kind of atmosphere should we expect? First ever LCS game, up 2-0 at Nats Park as they come home for game 3 just after 7:30 tonight.
I think the best person to ask on that would be Ryan Zimmerman. He's obviously seen a lot of games in Nationals Park, and he said after game 2, he said he expected to be electric. I mean, multiply anything you had in any NLCS game up a couple notches. You have a 2-0 lead with a chance to take a commanding 3-0 lead. I think this play is going to be bonkers, and it should be a great time.
All right, Sam, last one real quick before we let you go. Expectations for the bullpen if it's not Doolittle and Hudson?
Yeah, I think Tanner Rainey has solidified himself as the third guy out of that bullpen. I don't think any starters will be available today. So I think the right-hander, he's gotten his control under command, and he throws 100 miles an hour. So Dave Martinez likes him as that third option.
Sam, thank you, buddy. Good catching up.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
See you, pal.
Sam Fortier of the Post, that is your Beltway Blitz. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Steve Phillips joins us at 1 o'clock to break down the Nationals. If you've got a Nats thought, we will get to you. Also want to hop around on a couple of big NFL stories from yesterday as well on G&D as we continue right here on your flagship home for the NLCS leading Washington Nationals. Steve Phillips, who's a former Major League Baseball general manager, will be on the show at 1 o'clock. Some thoughts on the NFL that we saw yesterday. I will say first, your boy posted up at a bar in St. Louis. It was awesome. It's called Fox Sports Live Midwest. It's like a TV station / sports bar where they got like 10 bars in one.
Oh, that's cool.
I sat there. They took care of me. They put all the games I wanted on TV in front of me, took out the notebook at the bar, and was just kind of jotting down anything I needed to as the day went. It's a good way to watch NFL football. So let's run through it really quickly. Start you off with the Ravens beating the Bengals 23-17. Baltimore got outscored 10-9 by Cincinnati after the first quarter. This is not the kind of game, I don't think, if you're a Ravens fan, you can feel that good about.
A little bit of an escape. They were dominating early and then just didn't add on. And next thing you know, the Bengals are in the game, one possession. Uninspiring.
Lamar Jackson ran all over Cincinnati. That's the good news. 19 for 152 and 1 for the quarterback. I just don't know how many weeks he has that in him.
I know.
If you saw any of the shots he took in this game, he might get another week or two like that before he's knocked out.
On pace to shatter Michael Vick's single-season rush record for quarterbacks, but that's the key word, on pace. It only takes one. And I know he's fearless. I know he's tough as nails, and no one's questioning that. You've got to find a way to stay on the field.
Seahawks came back to beat the Browns 32-28. They trailed much of the game. Two things here. One, Seattle's really good and wasn't expected to be. They're 5-1, and they've won some of these 1 o'clock games on the East Coast that they would have lost in the past. And then number two, the Browns need to get Baker Mayfield to stop turning the ball over. Three interceptions that proved costly for them yesterday.
Russell Wilson, to me, the MVP of through this many weeks. He has been incredible. What he's asked to do is basically create magic out of nothing. They run the ball very well, and then the pass plays are basically Wilson scrambling around, pointing for someone to move, shaking a defender, and throwing a dime on the run. He's great.
The Saints are 3-0 without Drew Brees. They beat the Jaguars in a pitcher's duel 13-6 yesterday. All defense in this one. New Orleans' defense is excellent. Their special teams is among the best in football. And Sean Payton has this offense doing just enough. A lot's being made about Teddy Bridgewater. They scored 13 points. They had one touchdown. They had 6 points going into the fourth quarter. They won because of the other two phases.
Not a lot from Alvin Kamara for a couple straight weeks here. We thought that guy would be the focal point, and he's getting touches, but not that much production. Teams are loading up, and I think some low-scoring games like this are in the Saints' future until Breeze comes back.
In Kansas City, the Chiefs have dropped a couple now, 4-2. Even in the standings with the Texans, the Chiefs were 17-3 leaders after a quarter. There was a fumble that was returned for a touchdown. It looked like it put the game away in the first half. That ended up being negated, and the Texans got the ball back. And then they came back and won 31-24. This is a signature W for Deshaun Watson in Houston.
Most impressive win of the day to me. That's despite Will Fuller dropping three separate touchdown passes in this game, a week off of his superb career high. Tyreek Hill back from his clavicle injury with 80 yards and a couple of touchdowns. Carlos Hyde revenge game, a buck 16 and a touchdown, ran it great for Houston. Look out, they're 4-2, probably should be 5-1. Really impressive W.
My most impressive win of the weekend went to the Minnesota Vikings. Now, give Kirk Cousins some credit. The entire world's been bashing him. And then the last 2 weeks, the Vikings said, okay, we'll let you throw a little more if that's what you want. And he's been outstanding. Yesterday, three touchdown catches and well over 125 yards for Stephon Diggs. Adam Thielen caught a touchdown. 38 points. The Vikings are 4-2. They beat the Eagles by 18.
Defensively, they were incredible early. I think Philadelphia didn't get their first down, I believe, until the second quarter, if I've got that right, or it was close to it. They were dominant. Philadelphia, Carson Wentz made some miraculous plays himself. He's still really, really good. But all of a sudden, Philadelphia looks very vulnerable. 3-3 with one great signature win at Green Bay. But Dallas, we're going to get to here in a second. All of a sudden, the top of the NFC East is not special anymore.
The San Francisco 49ers have not lost. The list is 49ers, Patriots among unbeaten teams. Here it is. They're for real. I have not given them proper credit yet this season, and I will now bid them a apology.
Please consider my file updated.
20-7, they beat the Rams by 13. San Francisco's defense is great. The 49ers play the Redskins at FedEx Field this weekend. If they can win, they'd be 6-0.
San Francisco's defense is the truth. The Rams' offense, all of a sudden, not special right now. I don't know what they're doing well, but they've lost a few games in a row here. They are reeling.
The Dallas Cowboys were on the road against the Jets for an easy matchup.
Real shame how that one happened.
They'll win by 10 or 12, except that they lost to the 0-4 Jets. I still don't really know how. They outscored them 16-3 after halftime, but the Jets survived 24-22. The Cowboys are 3-3. Remember when everyone was saying they were Super Bowl contenders? I had them, I think, up to 3 in my power rankings after 3 weeks. They lose to the Jets. They've lost 3 straight. Dallas is in trouble.
Sam Darnold, the return of Sam Darnold and the magical spleen that could. The key play in this game is a 90-plus yard touchdown from Darnold to Robbie Anderson when Dallas had a little bit of momentum after they pinned the Jets deep with an early lead, but that broke the game open and Dallas's furious comeback falls short. A huge loss for the Cowboys. Huge.
The Steelers beat the Chargers 24-17 with their third quarterback, Devlin Hodges, who everyone was calling Duck for some reason.
It's very annoying. That
as
was
if
happening.
We know who that is or why he's called that. They won a game you shouldn't. To me, that is what you look for every single week if you're betting on sports. Like, who's playing the third-string quarterback on accident this week and is going to lose by 17 as a result? The Steelers found a way to beat the Chargers. That's a terrible loss for L.A. That's the worst loss of the weekend by far. So you've got the Chargers underachieving. I wouldn't want to be Anthony Lynn today. You've got the Cowboys with a gif going around the internet of Jason Garrett trying to give high fives to his teammates, and they're not even noticing that he's there as they lose. And then the other coach that's in big, big trouble is Dan Quinn of the Falcons. They lost by a point to the Cardinals.
Bad.
They're 1-5. To me, Dan Quinn and Jason Garrett are on watch as the next coach to lose their jobs.
Yeah, I'd expect Dan Quinn anytime. I know what Arthur Blank and the organization have said, but they're too talented for this. The Redskins are not too talented for this. This is what the Redskins are. That ain't who the Falcons are. They got good players, and they're playing terribly. To the Chargers, though, real quick, they went from underrated because their field goal kicker couldn't kick a field goal a couple years ago, where they were should have been a playoff team, an 11-12 win team. Underrated last year as a 12-4 division sharing team to comically overrated this year. They are a sideshow. I have no idea what the problem is there, but they're atrocious at this point. And nothing fluky about it. They're bad. They deserve to be 2-4, probably 1-5, to be honest with you, if Adam Vinatieri could make a chip shot field goal. They're gross.
We're not gross. We're
kind
just
of.
Two guys talking about baseball most of the day. That is your NFL Week 6 report on some of the proceedings from yesterday. Next, back to the Nats we go. Who's going to step up to get this offense going? Because if they only score 5 runs in their next 2 games, they're not winning both of them. That was a once-in-a-postseason kind of stretch there with Anibal Sanchez and Max Scherzer both taking no-hitters into the 7th. We're Grant and Danny. This is The Fan.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Game 3 NLCS action tonight from Nationals Park. Who's going to the game? We'd love to hear from you guys at 800-636-1067. The Nats offense has got to get going. There is no denying that. You look at what they were able to do or weren't able to do at the plate in the first 2 games, and they scored 2 and 3 runs respectively. Very easily could be down 2-0 facing Jack Flaherty tonight, and the conversation would be very different. But Sanchez pitched into the 8th without allowing a hit. Scherzer pitched into the 7th without giving up a base hit. And we're talking about them halfway to a World Series. If they win tonight, Danny, however they do it, it's going to be hard. Jack Flaherty's great, but you got Steven Strasburg on the hill to try to counter him.
It's pretty great, too.
Then you're 1 win away, and you have 4 cracks at it to get to the World Series. I mean, they're going to be in a position where it's going to be hard to imagine them not advancing, but they got to win first tonight.
No, you got to match St. Louis's desperation. And you know they'll be feeling as good as you can, knowing, hey, listen, this is fluky, talking about the Cardinals. This is fluky. We didn't hit for 2 games. We just finished battering the hell out of the Braves here just less than a few days ago. This is not who we are. We'll be fine. We'll put together good at-bats. We'll get to their bullpen. It's going to be just fine. We're back in this thing because we got Jack Flaherty on the hill. You got to match that if you're the Nationals. So to me, the guy, if there's a key figure in this lineup, it's Juan Soto. You've seen what the Cardinals' plan is, right? They've gotten him just all sorts of uncomfortable at the plate. He's swinging at curveballs and sliders and changeups out of the zone. And then late in the counts, they're going fastballs elevated. He's lost that part of what makes him so special, which is that knowledge of the strike zone, that poise, that you know, spitting on close pitches and waiting to be able to work his counts. You're seeing him just expand the zone, take these huge hacks, trying to do too much. He needs to be the Juan Soto that, you know, flicks the ball to left field sometimes. He needs to be the Juan Soto that's just putting the good swing on the ball as opposed to the guy that's got to hit the monster homer. Monster homers are awesome. I'm not anti-monster homer, but they don't come when you're trying to hit monster homers. They come when you just naturally react as an athlete like he did against Clayton Kershaw trying to stay in there. To me, he's got to get going for this club to start putting some crooked numbers
in. A couple things bode well, I think. And look, I am predicting that tonight they don't hit very much because Flaherty is that good. Before the series started, I picked the Nationals to win the series. But the one game I said there's no way I don't think they can win is game 3. And I at the time, we weren't sure Strauss was going to pitch, so it certainly gives them a better chance. Because the Cardinals are saying the same thing. In St. Louis right now, they're going, man, this offense is struggling, and now you got to deal with Steven Strasburg. But I really just have that much respect for Jack Flaherty, having watched him a lot in the second half of the season. He is unfathomably hot right now. He's been on another level that nobody can touch. So I'm not sure tonight's the night they get it going, but here's what I would say. I feel better about their offense because I think Trey Turner started to lock it in a little bit. He had two hits in his last three at-bats in game two. He's 3-for-9 now in the LCS. All of a sudden looks a little bit better. Adam Eaton, in his last at-bat, roped that double down the line. Remember, he had the triple in his last at-bat of game one.
Absolutely.
He's just 2-for-9. Juan Soto's 1-for-9. You mentioned it, but the five strikeouts have been what's killed me.
That's what you look at. If he was hitting the ball on the screws and getting out, you go, exactly. Okay, a matter of time. He doesn't look right.
Kendrick's been okay, had the double that eventually allowed him to score the first run of the series. He's 2-for-8. Michael Taylor had a big home run among his 2-for-8. He'll be replaced presumably by Victor Robles tonight. You hope Taylor plays because it means he's pinch running in a big spot or he's a defensive replacement maybe when you've got a lead in the outfield. I'd be curious to see this, though, before we continue with the offensive numbers. If you're up a run or two, can you, in the ninth inning, replace Juan Soto or even Adam Eaton with Michael Taylor's glove to try to get those three outs, knowing that let's say you just give up a solo home run and the game continues, you now don't have Juan Soto hitting cleanup, protecting Anthony Rendon?
I mean, you think Dusty Baker double-switching Anthony Rendon out and leaving it up to Wilmer Defoe. I mean, those situations are always alarming, right? When you go, oh, man, all it took, you're up one run, they get it, and now I don't have one of my best hitters in the lineup? I don't know if I could deal with that.
I'm probably not switching Soto out of the game no matter what.
It depends on the situation for me. If you're up three, let's say, into the ninth, okay, I can do that.
But if you're up three into the ninth, then theoretically him misplaying a ball doesn't matter much.
That's the other side.
I won't say much, but it's the same exact situation as Michael Taylor misplaying the ball. It was 3-0, it became 3-1, and you still won. So wouldn't you still keep him in the game because the juice isn't worth the squeeze then?
That's a good point. It'd have to be the exact right factor for me to be a defensive replacement for Soto. It would. It'd have to be let's say Soto makes the last out in the bottom of the eighth. The Nats are up three. Then I could do it.
Maybe, yeah.
Then I could do it. But in general, I think your point's well seen.
I'll pass this along. I talked to Davey Martinez before game two, and I asked him, I said, hey, are we at a point now where you're just going to start Zimmett first the rest of the way, or is it still kind of game by game, depending on the righty and who's pitching? He said, no, if he's healthy, he'll be playing for us. And he's probably earned that. He's 2-for-8 in this series with a double. He's been on base three times. Rendon has had the first inning base hit that has kept a three-up, three-down inning from happening for Miles Michaelis and Adam Wainwright, who have dominated in the first inning otherwise. But other than that, in the first inning where he gets stranded at first, he's a total 0-for-4 with three walks in this series. So at least he's seeing it well enough. Now, obviously, Anibal Sanchez went 0-for-4. Kurt Suzuki took an 0-for-4.
He's 0 for the postseason.
Yeah, he's still looking for hit number one, and it hadn't really been loud contact for him. Don, Mitchellsville, how are you feeling about tonight as the Nats are back in D.C. looking for some offense?
Hey, Granddaddy, man, I want to say I love y'all, man. I'm a P1 of the Granddaddy show.
Appreciate you, dude.
We appreciate that. Hey, you're a good man.
Donnie's doing.
No doubt, man. Hey, so my two guys, man, Ben Zimmerman, for real, it's been like since that wild card, man, when he came in, it was late. I think I paused the TV and went to go put on my Zimmerman jersey. And he broke the bat, man. He got a base hit, man. He's just been doing it ever since he got in. It's like that big moment. He don't fall back in Eaton. When Eaton pushed the ball, I think it was like eighth inning or game seven. Was it game five? No, game three just passed. Game two, I meant. But anyway, when he started running, he put his head down like he was focused on that. He wanted the big clap. He wanted to go all the way to third, man, and he did it, man. So I think they focused sharp. I appreciate y'all. Matt, go Nats. Keep doing what y'all doing, man. Thank you,
buddy.
Appreciate you, buddy. Yeah, it's a good point on Zim. That jam shot, broken bat hit, that is the only reason why really we're still here. Everyone talks about the Soto hit, which ended up winning the game. But the Zim jam shot made it all possible. I think the exit velocity, if memory serves, was 68 miles an hour. I mean, it's a hit. If you look at expected batting average, probably, 17% of the time or whatever. It falls in. Your season continues. You win, and he got going after that. The three-run home run at Nats Park in game three. No, four,
game
rather.
Four.
That pushed it to game five in the division series. Massive. but he's just strung together good at bats, even when he's getting out.
I mean, he drilled that ball that Colton Wong made an incredible play on, right?
Yes.
I mean, just he's using the whole field. There are a couple times with runners in scoring position where he's taking those early count fastballs that you go, man, you may not get a better one to look at than that, but putting together good ABs for the most part. I mean, I know the numbers don't jump out at you this series. He's 2-for-8 with a walk, but that doesn't tell the whole story. His 2-for-8, very different than Juan Soto's 1-for-9. You see the comfort level.
And the other really good point in that call was when Eaton went to the left center gap in game one of the LCS.
Uh-huh.
So this is the triple. It's 1-0. He scores to make it 2-0 on a Howie Kendrick base hit. He's right. The caller's right. He was thinking 3 out of the chute. He was digging. And right away I thought, he's rounding first. I'm going, no, 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 no. I'm saying this out loud. Stay at second. No, he beats it by a hair.
Uh-huh.
Bang, bang play. But it's because from his first step out of the box, he was thinking 3.
So no, a lot of times, a little bit of inside, if you go, oh, it's a clear double, you bow out on the way to first base, you can run straight to second base, right? If you're thinking 3, you basically run straight to and through almost that first base bag, and then your bow out is on the way to second.
Right.
Instead of taking multiple turns, he took 1 because he was thinking 3 the entire time.
Let's go to Chris in Hyattsville on G&D. What's up, Chris? The Nats are up 2-0 in the NLCS, just like we all thought they would be in May.
What's up, Chris?
Oh, of course. I was totally banking on this. I put the mortgage on it, so
right.
I'm sitting pretty right now.
Hey, but guess what? You were still calling us. You were still watching every game in May. You were riding hard.
You've earned
with
this
them
too, buddy.
You were dying with the Nats.
I'm ride or die. If I could win off the field for a second, yesterday I coached my team, my son's little league team, and I gave them walk-up songs, and my son walked up to Calma, which is the Dozier song.
Yeah, the Dozier
right
song.
On.
That's right.
Right on.
We've got our own remix now of that song.
I love it. I love it. That remix is killer. So I know Eaton had a decent game and Turner had a better game recently, but I also don't put a ton of stock into the game 2 in St. Louis because of the start time. I don't know why MLB does this every time the Cardinals make the playoffs, but they start in those horrendous shadows at 4:00 all the time. And the first 3 innings are nothing but a strikeout fest. So, the little bit of a grain of salt there with that. However, I really want to see Turner get to a count that's not 0-2 or 1-2 every time he comes up to bat. He's getting on base exclusively by hitting the ball and has, I'm looking at his stats right now, 2 walks and 34 at bats. I just need a little bit more discipline from Turner and Eaton. And then hopefully I think Rendon and Soto are going to have a lot more comfortable at bats with guys on base.
I agree 100%. The guys at the top of this order have to get on to make it so you can't work around Rendon, make it so you probably can't pitch backwards the same way that they have to Soto. I mean, that to me is where the meat is. That 3, 4, 5, those at-bats become more impactful when the top of the order is going. That's why when you and I have done the pregame show, and then when you've been on the road and I've done the pregame show with Heisty and company, what are the keys to the game? You know what the keys always are for me? Eaton and Turner. Eaton and Turner. Eaton and Turner. Working counts and getting on base.
I just got a tweet from Tim. He says, did you attribute Soto's mini slump to his lack of shuffle in game 2? He was definitely off his game. No, I've heard a few people say this. He normally does that Soto shuffle basically after he spits on a good close pitcher's pitch or when he's kind of up in the count, feeling it. He's basically taunting you going, you got to come to me, sucker. You're either going to come to me or it's curtains, bro. And that didn't happen in that game. Like, he was swinging and missing. He was behind in the count.
He's down 0-2. He's not shuffling.
So I don't think he made a decision going into game 2. I'm not going to do the shuffle because I didn't like it. He's going to do it as soon as he's up 2-0 or 3-1 in the count or he spits on a pitch. It just, he was behind. I think his slump, just like the first few at-bats of the wild card, I think he's trying to do way too much. And it's the opposite of what he's done his entire career as a 20-year-old 2 years in now. Shorten your swing, you know, get widen that base, and make some contact. I think he's trying to hit the ball 449 feet like he did at Dodger Stadium. And I don't need him to. I just need him to swing and get on base. 800-636-1067 is the number on Grant and Danny. We'll take your calls on the Nats. Steve Phillips, a former Major League Baseball general manager, going to join us in a few. Also got a couple of Redskins thoughts we haven't gotten to yet as well as we continue on 106.7 The Nats. I just realized that I took the Cowboys in all my Survivor pools this weekend.
Well, that's because my influence over you was Jerry Jones, Doc Prince of hell influenced your thinking there.
Well, darn.
That didn't work out.
He gone.
You know something else we have not talked about yet? And I don't know how much we need to spend on it. Just because the Nationals are playing in an LCS game today and the Redskins actually did win. Could Josh Norman have been any less productive to the cause of trying to accomplish victory in the final few snaps on Sunday? He had that penalty that kept that drive going down around the goal line, and then he just gave up the easiest touchdown in the history of touchdowns to DeVante Parker. What are you doing? Where are you going?
He's not.
Have you seen
good.
That yes. replay of the route?
Oh, yeah.
Parker ran like the laziest kind of just in route I've ever seen in my life. And Norman's backpedaling at the goal line like 4 yards off of him, gives him a massive cushion. And then when he sees him break, kind of doesn't quite bite just yet because he might come back out, then tries to close as the ball's already been thrown. It looked like he beat me for that touchdown. And this is a $15 million cornerback.
Like a baby deer on ice, just getting moved around. He's not good. I mean, he's not
who
terrible.
Who loves cushions more? A lady who sleeps with 17 pillows or Josh Norman?
He's not good.
Who loves cushions more? A guy who sleeps on 6 mattresses or Josh Norman? What is he doing? Now, at least Quentin Dunbar picked off another pass, the best cornerback on the Redskins.
Jumping route, too, by the way. Anticipated, figured it out. Great hands play. That was awesome.
And I know we're sour apples from hell. I know all about what we are. We are sour apples from hell, man. I need you to not give that big of a cushion on the goal line with the game on the line, please.
You can get. He has every right to be mad at me and you and everybody else. Do that. All I'm asking is for the same right to point out you're getting paid too much money to produce how little you produce.
Yeah, yeah.
Ta-da. There's the relationship.
Pre-game on Fox yesterday, Jay Glazer was taking questions in a mailbag segment from fans. He got one about the Redskins and Bruce Allen.
Any chance Bruce Allen goes bye-bye if the Redskins go 2-14, 1-15, or 0-16? Honestly, I don't. I really don't. It's Dan Snyder's guy. I think Dan still, like, just the relationship those two guys have, that's his beer and wins guy. I just don't see it happening. But at some point, if they continue this futility, I do think, look, there's a culture problem there. Even though they say there's no culture problem, there's a culture problem there with the Redskins.
No, there's not. The culture's damn good.
Culture's damn good.
The culture's so good, they beat the Dolphins this weekend.
We're focused on that.
Jay Gruden was the problem. Don't you understand, Jay Glazer? We ran the ball all the way to a win this weekend. 17-16 over Miami. You saw how we defended that two-point conversion play.
That's our identity.
They never had a chance. That play would have been blown up before it got started if Drake didn't volleyball that ball to the ground.
Unreal. But yeah, so you've hypothesized that this is going to be it for old Brucey.
Well,
right?
If I may make a small clarification.
Please, I want to make sure accurate here.
So I do not believe Bruce Allen will be the team president of football operations next year. Now, I have not gone on record to say he will actually be gone. I think there is a chance he stays with the team in some stadium capacity.
Whatever
they make
that
up
is,
for
yeah.
him. But yes, what I will adamantly say, and I'll put in pen, and I have no real knowledge of this. I had some people floating this to me months ago that if it got bad enough, they thought this would be the last ride. So yes, I think Bruce Allen's days running the football operation are numbered. I think they have someone else doing that next year.
I am on record with zero information, even less than you, saying everybody's got the same office. And he might even get another title put on his door. Bruce Allen is here to stay. He's here through whatever it is. And then maybe eventually he might get let go. But I think they did their big move. They're banking on them being slightly better under Bill Callahan, where they'll run the dumb ball.
What about Mike Tomlin? You didn't hear the big rumor over the weekend?
I did hear that.
By the way, what is going on here? So I went on Pittsburgh radio a few days ago, our intercom station.
Did they ask you about it?
Yeah. I mean, they had me on to talk about it because
no.
the Redskins plane was seen there. And they're going, what can you tell us? So what are they going to trade for him? And I'm going, this is fantasy football stuff. Is there a 0% chance? No, it's probably a little higher than that. Do they want Mike Tomlin? Sure they want Mike Tomlin. Would they like him? Of course they would. You're going to trade a bunch of draft picks for Mike Tomlin when you need to rebuild? What sense does that make?
None.
How about you go spend money on a coach, not draft picks? There are a lot of other guys who could coach your team. By the way, poorly, because your next coach is not going to have any talent they're going to lose with Mike Tomlin or someone else.
Well, they would want him to do the, hey, you were good in Pittsburgh, do it the way they do it in Pittsburgh, run the entire operation. which is the wrong way to do it. That does not work in the NFL. That works better than their current structure.
It's what I want. I thought you liked that. Go hire the guy that's done it well somewhere else and ask him to run it that way.
To be a general manager, yes, you can then hire the coach. When you have the same guy do everything, history has proven that doesn't work.
You don't like the idea of the GM and the coach title.
No, I will take a Gibbs or Shanahan, an actual adult running everything, over non-adults doing whatever the hell this is.
Right.
Right, it's better than that, but the correct way to do it, the tried and true.
GM from a good organization.
Yes.
Head coach, like Tomlin, working for that guy.
And those two offices communicating, like a phone line would go between the offices. Hey, what system are you running? We're running this 34. Okay, cool. I'll get your players for that. Hey, do you want this guy back, Zach Brown? No. Okay, we gave him 3 years, $24 million. Oops. Hey, do you want a rookie quarterback? No. Okay, we got your rookie quarterback. That's what's going on now. I don't want that. I want cohesion. I want symmetry. I want people to be on something. I looked this up. It's called the same page. The same page.
And that works because, so they're in unison, you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. So what you don't hear, as soon as someone gets drafted, you hear a huge faction that wants everyone to know, we didn't want this kid. We don't like him. We don't need him.
What That's percentage of Redskins fans do you think wanted that two-point conversion to be converted at the end of Sunday's game?
It's a non-zero percentage.
Because they're so tired of it. They're so fed up. They didn't want to hear that they're close.
And you're not a real
Because you know what they
fan,
do, right? They're going to now say, see, we can win. We're close to beat the Dolphins. I mean, you now, in the next handful, get ready for this. In the next handful of days, you're playing Kyle Shanahan on Sunday and then Kirk Cousins on Thursday. It's the revenge tour now. And two teams, forget those people that are just way better than you. San Francisco should beat you. Minnesota should beat you. And you're potentially going to be staring at 1-7 on the back end of all that. And Matt LaFleur's revenge game's coming up a little bit later. Yeah. They don't have to deal with the Sean McVay revenge game, luckily.
Did anyone from the Bills used to work for the Redskins? Because that might be a revenge game.
Lorenzo Alexander.
There you go. Their defense is excellent, by the way.
I'm not going to put that in the same category. But I see what you're doing. And Zoe wanted to be here, and they didn't want to pay him. So there's that. Grant and Danny on the fan. Steve Phillips is a former GM in Major League Baseball. What's he make of the Nats being up 2-0 on the Cardinals? What's he expect Flaherty Strasburg tonight? He joins us next. D&D on the Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.